Whoa.
Hello, my name is Jim Storer. I'm here with my business partner, Rachel Hoppe, from the Community Roundtable, and we're really excited to be talking with Nancy White from Full Circle Associates. Hi, Nick.
Hey, howdy doody.
So we were just chatting in the pre-call and just laughing about how it's a bunch of geezers here talking, but I've got a probably show my age by talking a little bit about how I first discovered you. It was back in the 90s when I was kind of just starting with Community, and it was interesting. I found your stuff, and I've continually referred back to it. And, you know, you talk about online facilitation. You talk about virtual work. You wrote a book on digital habitats. You talk about community building and storytelling. There's so much that you've covered over the years that I think, you know, in the resources section on your website, it's still there. And I want to, I guess, start it off by asking you, did you imagine that community and social business would all be mainstream someday when you first got started back then?
Well, when I fell down the digital rabbit hole, which was 96 or was it 97 with Howard Rheingold's Electric Minds, my experience was so viscerally eye-opening and profound that I knew it was something significant. I had no sense really at that point about the transformation that this peer-to-peer tools that the internet affords us would, you know, go as far as it has, and I'm sure it will go farther. But you know when you see something, you go, that's it. It's there. It's significant. I may not be able to describe it. I may not be able to fully understand it. But there's something here about being able to connect people who wouldn't otherwise get to connect geographically or because of their socioeconomic status or their job or whatever. That this way of connecting with people was profound, and it could have super important positive impact on the world. You know, kind of going back to that idea that if we know a little bit about each other, we're probably less likely to blow each other up. So for me, that was the starting point. The business part of it, you know, it's funny. Ostensibly, I joined Electric Minds because I had joined an internet startup and I was supposed to understand how we would have a customer-to-customer interaction. And, you know, this was fairly early to be thinking about that. And I circled back around to the business thing, but for me, the profound thing was the connection.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I have a question for you, just because of, like, the milestone that we're hitting, which is, what did we not know 5 years ago about community management that you think maybe we know today? Like, what's happened more recently in the field that you think is new, interesting, different?
It's the nature of the connection. So when we started back, and I certainly wasn't on the first wave, I was probably second wave, and, you know, when I say geezer, I'm old, I can honestly claim it. But in terms of, you know, those people who were in online communities before us when they were on dial-up, you know, they're the real people who's on, what do you say, on whose shoulders we stand, upon whose shoulders we stand?
Yeah.
English is tricky. The original stuff was around bounded communities where, you know, you had a login and an ID that allowed you to enter into that community. And I think what has been really significant in the last probably 5 to 8 years has been the idea that all these communities with their boundedness sit inside larger intersecting networks.
Mm.
And so now we're not connecting just with our, you know, our professional or our personal or our hobby interests in finding like-minded people. We're intersecting much more lightly with a larger group of people. I was reading about Beyoncé's, you know, community and how they intersect on Twitter. And, you know, it's not about their personal relationships with every single one in the Bayhive or the Beehive, whatever you call it. It is their association as fans of Beyoncé, which is a different relationship than a bounded group of people who care about something together, but also who are there with and for each other very particularly. I know who you are. You know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've got a different sense of a digital crowd. And this morning I was pointed to an article on NationalGeographic.com about karma of the crowd. And it's talking about the throngs at Kumbh Mela in India, the world's largest religious festival. And I just want to quote this, because I think this really taps into this, something that about this network way of working was, in the West, there's a pervasive idea that when people congregate, they surrender their individual identity, along with their ability to reason and behave morally, some of the very qualities that make us human. What our research shows us is that actually crowds are critical to society, says psychologist Stephen Reicher of the University of St. Andrews in the UK. They help us form our sense of who we are. They help form our relations to others. They even help determine our physical well-being. And all of a sudden I'm going like, you know, the beehive. And the network of Twitter people who respond to a disaster. Or the people, we had a news agency in our town lose two staff members in a helicopter crash, and to see how the community coalesce around them. And this is a community of people who really don't know each other, but who coalesce around something and provide support and information. And so it's sort of like we're swarming. We're getting back to finding ways to be in sync with people larger than our personal sphere. And I'm making big circles with my arms right now, so you can tell, you know, this is big circles with the arms, right?
When the marathon bombings happened in Boston last year, Bostonians
exactly.
were gloriously, like, independent, we don't really chit-chat, and all of a sudden there was a purpose to connect and come together and
exactly.
collaborate, and then it dissipated again when the kind of need went away.
And the digital means to do this is forming and maturing, and for me, expanding the repertoire of what's possible for a quote-unquote online community, and significantly expanding the need for a different repertoire of how we usefully support that. Where, you know, Jim, you said the things on my website are still relevant. When we're talking about bounded groups, I really don't see significant fundamental changes. The tools have changed, and the way we, you know, try and bend those tools to our will certainly always is always evolving. But this new set of network leadership, network facilitation, network activation, it's a world of influence versus control. This is new.
Interesting. Because a lot we find that we're having those conversations a lot, too, and it's about the, I don't even want to call it the handshake, but, like, when do those bounded communities interact and spill over and when do we send people from that swarm into a bounded community? Like, where's the boundaries? And
that's the point
for individuals to participate in one or the other, like, depending on what they need to do.
That's the point, is when you have more opportunities to interact, what you're doing is managing or working the boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing research right now, a group of us are doing research on how international development organizations choose, design, deploy, monitor, and evaluate online collaboration platforms. And mainly because we see millions of dollars wasted and people actually not very critical about the outcomes that they get and not very clear about what outcomes they're expecting. And so we started mapping kind of the domains of where people were using this. And as we mapped domains, everything interesting was happening at the boundaries. And where there was problems, it's where people weren't working the boundaries, where the field and headquarters hadn't figured out how to usefully recognize their differences and find the space for similarities, when they needed to all do the same thing and when there needed to be total freedom for doing things in many different ways. So this working the boundaries, to me, is the edge of our profession right now.
I don't know why, but, like, hearing you talk has me thinking about a heart and blood, like just this constant pulsing and blood flow.
Well, that is so funny. I don't know. Somebody posted something on Google Plus a couple days ago about synchronization. It was Gideon Rosenblatt, and he posted an article by a guy whose name I can't remember at the moment. We can look it up, and you can share it when you post this. Talked about how synchronization happens often in nature, and in fact how our heart, and I may have this fact wrong, but the metaphor is lovely, so it still works as a metaphor. Our heart couldn't pump our blood just on the mechanics of the heart alone. It is the coordination of all the cells in kind of receiving and sending back out that's coordinated by the brain and the nerves throughout the body that makes the heart a successful pumper. And the fact is, it's like we have one big heart, but we have millions of little hearts, and many of them are in our brain. And when we think about the networks. It's like when you can get enough hearts beating in some sort of synchronization, you can achieve something different than if they're all just out there beating on their own. But often they're out there beating on their own. It's those moments, just as you said, that you bring them together. And then nesting within that, you know, is the individual community that has a deeper relationship, is more relationship focused, and deeper commitment of time and attention. And then, of course, that leads to the obvious challenge that I would presume you and all your network face, which is people now have these opportunities to engage. And so, you know, how do we as individual participants in this kind of balance our depth and breadth so that it is, we can find those moments of sync and we can let it go when we don't need it?
Yeah, and a lot of the work I do, especially on the internal side, the collaboration side of the work that we do, is where's the appropriate moment in a knowledge workflow to access each type of environment, like being self-conscious about what you're trying to do and what the best social environment for that is.
And when it's useful and when it's not distracting.
Yeah, and how do we kind of configure tools and community management processes to help people figure that out? Because it's, you know, the average individual is just overwhelmed. Really understand. So coming back to my question, I want to ask a flip question, which is, what did we already know 5 years ago from your perspective that still hasn't gotten enough attention or still hasn't stuck in the mainstream?
For me, there's always that tension, and you had just mentioned in your last comment, between the tools and the processes.
Mm.
And what I still, in fact, I'd ask you, because I think you'd know the answer to this much better than I would, is what is the kind of overall intelligence of the tool-building side to recognize that the social processes are really important, and tools have to be plastic enough to respond to different social processes in different organizations in different contexts. I mean, even within different organizations, I look at, you know, a team versus a department versus cross-cutting issues and all that kind of stuff. Tools seem to want to categorize things with a certain model, but organizations don't always follow those models. So I'm kind of curious what you're seeing in that, because for me, I haven't been as deeply or intimately engaged in the tool side of things, because there's so many now, to understand if that has moved forward.
Well, I would say on the user experience side, tools are pretty flexible. Where I'm seeing the biggest disconnect is the tools are thinking about analytics and measurement in the wrong way. So on that front, they're not flexible. And so
say more.
You can't measure or see what's going on and configure how you see that. You can't manage it, right? So that's where I'm seeing the biggest disconnect, is on the analytics and the back end side to really help community managers create behavior flows really flexibly, and then kind of track those flows so that they can see whether they're actually making a difference.
So do you have a dream set of analytics?
It's kind of what I'm not seeing today is like being able to define the behavior you're trying to promote and then track that multivariate behavior and say, I want to see who does this and then who does this and then who does this and then who does this. And show me that flow against, you know, all the other flows. Like, you can't do things like that. It's very web analytics based. It says, oh, well, you know, this many thousand people saw this page. And you're like, well, okay.
So you want to crawl inside the user head and go, like, did a light bulb just go off? Did an action just occur? Did a sharing just occur? And sharing you could probably get some sense of, but that idea of behavior, it's interesting. I'm doing some e-learning design right now, and constantly trying to understand what behavior you're trying to support is actually.
That's where you get ROI and value, right? Like,
by
helping support a new behavior, you can change how something happens. And like on the social change side of that, it's huge. Like, okay, somebody shared something, but did they do anything after that? Like, did it make an impact? or did it just fly by in their digital stream?